John Bachman, who pierces people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my rock?
Now the N is for not, oh no, my phone's just sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Mukitas, who plays a sour note. W is Tiasis, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to This Week in Palestine, service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for September 15th to the 21st, 2012. Palestinian politicians reiterate interest in one democratic state solution, labeling the two-state solution as failure. Meanwhile, Israeli military continue attacks against Palestinians in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. These stories and more are coming up. Stay tuned. Let's begin our weekly report with the non-violent activities organized in the West Bank. This week, protests were organized in the central West Bank villages of Bilayin, Na'alin, and Nabi Saleh, as well as the village of Al-Masara, southern West Bank. IMEMC's Ghassan Bannoura with the story.
This week, protests were organized in solidarity with Palestinian political prisoners and their hunger strike. In central West Bank, at the villages of Bil'in and Na'alin, protesters, along with their international and Israeli supporters, reached the Israeli wall before soldiers attacked them with tear gas and sound bombs. Soldiers also used chemical water that produced very bad smell. Many were treated for the effects of tear gas inhalation in both villages. Meanwhile, at the village of Nabi Saleh, soldiers stopped the weekly anti-wall protest at the village entrance and used tear gas to force people back. Local youth clashed with Israeli soldiers. Many were treated for the effects of tear gas inhalation, and the protest ended shortly after. Meanwhile, in southern West Bank, at the village entrance of Al-Masara, Israeli troops forced anti-wall protesters back into the village using rifle butts and batons. No injuries were reported. For IMEMC News, this is Ghassan Bannoura.
This week, Israeli attacks targeting Palestinians left two dead in Gaza. Meanwhile, troops conducted at least 23 military incursions into Palestinian communities in the West Bank and abducted seven civilians. IMEMC's Salam Kumsiya has the details.
On Wednesday night, the Israeli Air Force extrajudicially executed two members of the Palestinian residents and wounded a third one in Rafah City, southern Gaza Strip. an Israeli warplane fired a missile at the vehicle in which the three members were traveling. The Israeli military admitted responsibility for the attack and claimed that the targeted persons are members of Al-Aqsa Guards Group, which is close to Hamas. Earlier in this week, Israeli gunboats opened fire at Palestinian fishing boats in the northern and southern Gaza Strip. No casualties were reported. In other news, the murderers of the Italian peace activist Vittorio Arrigoni were sentenced to life terms in prison after being found guilty of kidnapping and killing Arrigoni. A Gaza military court sentenced two of the indicated to life terms, meanwhile a third was sentenced to 10 years for taking part in the kidnapping and a fourth for 1 year for hiding the suspects. The Palestinian Center for Human Rights in Gaza attended the court representing the family of Vittorio since the beginning of the trial on August 11, 2011. The center said they have demanded the court to refrain from sentencing the suspects to death penalty if they were indicated, as the center opposes the death penalty in principle. This also was based on a request from Vittorio's family. Also this week, Palestinian sources said on Thursday that arrangements are being conducted to transfer alien hunger striking detainee Samir al-Bark to Egypt after a sharp decline in his health condition at a Ramla Israeli prison clinic. Al-Bark, from the southern West Bank city of Qalqilia, started his hunger strike 122 days ago, demanding his release as he is being held by Israel without charges. Also on Thursday, a number of armed extremist Israeli settlers illegally confiscated 6,000 square meters of privately owned Palestinian lands south of Al-Khadr near the West Bank city of Bethlehem. On Wednesday, a group of armed extremist Israeli settlers of the Avraham Avino illegal Israeli settlement invaded a Palestinian home in the southern West Bank city of Hebron and attacked two family members, including an 8-year-old child. The child is said to be sustained various cuts and bruises. For IMEMC News, this is Salam Khumsi.
This week in Palestine, Chief Palestinian Negotiator Ahmed Khoury reiterated the Palestinian stance that the one democratic state solution seems workable amidst failure to reach a two-state solution. Meanwhile, Palestinian national reconciliation is still far to be reached. The details with IMEMC's Rami Al-Mighari.
Egyptian Foreign Minister Mohamed Amrou asserted that his country is keen to bring the Islamist Hamas Party in Gaza and the Fatah Party of Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas in the West Bank together for a national unity. The Egyptian high-ranking official was responding to President Abbas's concerns that recent visits by top Hamas leaders to Egypt would signal further split between the two parties. Amrou confirmed that Egypt welcomes Hamas officials as regular visitors, not as politicians. Some Arab media sources suggested that Hamas has recently opened up offices in Cairo, something that Amrou denied totally. This week, Palestinian Prime Minister of Hamas Ismail Haniyeh paid a second visit to Cairo in 2 months. He met this time with Egyptian intelligence chief on ways to bolster security cooperation between the two sides in light of Sinai terrorist attack of August 5 that killed 16 Egyptian soldiers and 7 others near the border with Gaza. In early July, Haniyeh and other Hamas leaders met with Egyptian President Mohamed Morsi in Cairo. Meanwhile, Palestinian national unity is yet to be reached, despite last year's Cairo brokered agreement to start implementing unity. Hamas says elections come after conciliation, while Fatah insists that elections are a priority. In another news, Chief Palestinian Negotiator Ahmed Khoury said this week that the Palestinian Authority is considering a one-state solution as an alternative to the two-state solution, which according to Khoury proved failure. For IMEMC News, I am Rami Al-Mighari in Gaza.
And that's all for today from This Week in Palestine. This was the weekly report for September 15th to 21st, 2012, from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by Hussam Kassis and me, George Rishmal.
Yeah. Pakistan, 20th of September. Nader was reporting the death of a soldier of unreported nationality from an insurgent attack in an undisclosed location in southern Afghanistan. Afghanistan, 21st of September. An anti-Taliban tribal leader and four members of his family were killed by the Taliban in southern Afghanistan in the province of Uruzgan. The man, Haji Kadar, two boys and two women were killed in the attack in the district of Darawood, said a spokesman for the provincial governor. Up to five civilians were killed and seven others wounded in a roadside bombing in Helmand province, a provincial police spokesman reported. Quote, the blast occurred when a civilian vehicle was running on a road in Dasht area of Nawai Baraki area at around 12:30 p.m. local time. The dead included three adult men and two children, police spokesman Farid Ahmad Farang told China's Xinhua news agency. Mr. Barack Obama, you cannot win this war. Now is the time to throw in the towel, bring all the troops home today.
Strength in their hearts and fear in their eyes. Old soldiers never die, they only fade away. But the young ones do not die, no, they are cut down instead. And someone pulled the trigger, gave the order, held the sword. And someone wrote the advert in the paper that they read. I will be done. But you won't get your hands on my son. You can't wait till kingdom come.
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to wsqtradio@hushmail.com. Repeat, wsqtradio@hushmail.com. Summer, heavily armed SWAT police raided an Occupy and anarchist house on the West Coast. Several activists were served subpoenas to testify before a grand jury in Seattle, Washington. On the 13th of September, two refused to testify and one of them, Matt Duran, was sent to jail for refusing to snitch. The other was released with another subpoena for later. Other subpoenas are rumored to have been issued, but the grand jury has been unable to serve them. Since the original raid and the issuance of the subpoenas, there has been a storm of retaliatory attacks by anarchists on police facilities and courthouses from coast to coast. Now, with one activist in jail and another threatened with jail, the retaliatory strikes have escalated. 17th of September, the following communique appeared on www.anarchistnews.org. Quote, on September 17th, under cover of night, we sabotaged a railway track north of New York City. Wearing standard work gloves, we took a piece of thick gauge copper wire and tied it from one track to another, disrupting a signal relay. This temporarily renders the track unusable. We did this in solidarity with our anarchist comrades in the Northwest, particularly Matt Duran. The courage all of you have shown continues to inspire us. Now is the time to attack. Anarchists against linear movement. That's the end of the communique. Hey, cops and grand juries, it's time you quit harassing anarchists. Other anarchists are not playing games when it comes to striking back. Railway sabotage is no joke, and neither are grand juries. Of September, anarchists in Vancouver, Canada, smashed the windows of an upscale Italian restaurant. This was done not only as punishment for gentrification in a neighborhood, but also in solidarity with anarchists refusing to testify before the notorious Seattle grand jury. This communique was issued on anarchistnews.org. I would hold my head up. Last night, an Italian yuppie restaurant had several of its windows liberated. This action was done in solidarity with all those fighting gentrification in Vancouver, the Cleveland Four, grand jury resistors, and anti-gentrification comrades everywhere. You can't stop us. Yuppies, you can dine in hell. Signed A. That's the end of the communique for the Vancouver anti-gentrification and grand jury resistance solidarity direct action. September. Yet another solidarity attack on a U.S. corporation was carried out in solidarity with anarchists resisting a Seattle grand jury and refusing to snitch. This communique appeared on www.anarchistnews.org on the 20th September. During the night of September 19th, we attacked the Bank of America. One ATM card slot was glued and screen smashed, and three windows of the bank smashed. This was done in solidarity with Matt Duran and the other grand jury resistors and those currently facing repression in Italy. Now is the time to attack. Always a step forward, never a step back. No compromise with the state and capital. That ends the communique for the September 19th attack on Bank of America in solidarity with imprisoned grand jury resistor Matt Duran and other grand jury resistors. On the 12th of September, anti-globalization and Occupy activists disrupted the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, trade globalization talks. The highly secretive negotiations were being conducted at the Lansdowne Resort in Virginia. Some activists blocked delegates from entering the meeting. Others sent up weather balloons holding a 75-foot banner reading, "Free trade my ass. Flush the TPP." One activist was suspended in a climbing harness, 20 feet in the air in a blockading position. The cops threatened to both apply a taser to the metal poles and to fire a pepper spray at her. The taser would not have worked so long as she did not touch the poles, and tasers combined with pepper spray are a notorious fire hazard. With the road blocked, and with the use of force also blocked, the cops had no choice but to negotiate to let Miss Margaret Flowers descend in peace without being arrested in order to get the road reopened. Meanwhile, three Occupy DC activists managed to covertly enter and disrupt the negotiations themselves. Here's what things sounded like as they shouted down the so-called free trade talks.
Mic check!
Mic check!
Mic check!
Mic check!
The Trans-Pacific Partnership!
The Trans-Pacific Partnership!
This is cool!
To trample through.
To kill the future for our children and grandchildren and for all of the 99%.
This will kill the future for our children and our grandchildren, the 99%.
Day, the Biotic Barf Brigade, on their first deployment ever, managed to put more activists inside the Trans-Pacific Partnership talks, posing as negotiators.
The TPP restricts access to generic medicines? That makes me sick.
Oh my god. The TPP exploits sweatshop workers too.
The TPP blocks on climate change policies.
The TPP weakens food safety standards.
Although security guards eventually caught the Bionic Barf Brigade and escorted them in their barf bags out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade talks, I think the point was made that corporate globalization makes people sick. The real TPP negotiators should just be glad this wasn't the Biotic Baking Brigade, or they would have had a face full of pie to go with the bad memories.
Why am I carrying this sign? It says, God, move over.
That's appropriate from a company called Monsatan.
That's correct. Monsanto, is essentially saying that God, move over. We're going to create the food. God didn't create it.
Monsanto is well known as the world's worst purveyor of genetically modified seeds, the kind that grow what is known as frankenfood. On the 17th of September, Occupy activists held Occupy Monsanto events all over the world. Here in D.C., Occupy Monsanto dumped genetically modified foods on the sidewalk in front of Monsanto's lobbying headquarters on I Street.
I'm with the Genetic Crime Unit of Washington, D.C. And the Genetic Crime Unit likes to expose genetically modified foods wherever they are. We're gonna dump this. It's a genetic hazard. We've got the plate, we got the safety perimeter here. I'm gonna step out of the safety perimeter.
You're gonna dump a genetic hazard?
We're gonna dump the genetically engineered food, okay?
So you're gonna dump hazardous material.
We're gonna dump it. It's symbolic of what we're doing here.
There it goes, hazardous materials dumped on the sidewalk in front of Monsanto.
Yeah. Okay, so we've got our dump going here. Now I want to ask other members of the GCU to please start opening the packages here and start handing them to me. I'm going to read the ingredients. But if you want to pick one up and just open it up, and please, everybody grab a package. You have a free hand. And okay, so what we got here is the Morningstar Farm Spicy Black Bean Burger. Now this sounds good to a vegan, you know, but let's look at what's in here. Ingredients, textured vegetable protein. That's known as soy protein concentrate. Weak gluten, water for hydration, cooked black beans, cooked brown rice. Now let's go right back to the top ingredient. The number one ingredient in this burger, this veggie burger, is soy protein concentrate. Soy. Now let's talk about soy. 90% of the soy is GMO in this country. And it's GMO, it's Roundup Ready soy primarily. Now Roundup Ready soy, they're spraying with herbicide to kill weeds. And that herbicide residue remains on the food. So we gotta dump this, okay? Okay, let's move on here. This is getting a little bit messy. Maybe someone could plug up my phone.
Here comes the hazardous liquid dump.
Okay, so this is the hazardous liquid junk. I think, now this is really, what we're doing here is we're creating the American stomach, okay? This is the stomach of many Americans, and we wonder why they're getting sick. So now we're gonna put some Doritos and some root beer together, I think, right? Right here in the center. All right, you ready? Here we go. Yes. Yeah. Doesn't it look really good? It's so nasty. Okay, look at that. Look how it's reacting. The Doritos, the corn chips, and the root beer. It's all reacting right now. You get this chemical reaction going on.
Meanwhile, activists outside denounce such crimes by Monsanto as their incredibly ugly practice of suing small farmers whose crops are contaminated by Monsanto's dishonestly patented pollen.
Whose fields have been contaminated with Monsanto's GMO seeds. We need to stand up for our organic farmers. We need to stand up for our right to know if we're eating GMOs. We need to stand up for our environment that is being quickly and efficiently destroyed by the use of herbicides and pesticides like Agent Orange and DDT derivatives that are necessary for GMOs to flourish. It's really a perfect business model. Create GMOs that you have a patent for that are dependent on your patented pesticides and herbicides to survive. Take over organic fields, shut down organic farmers, and have a total monopoly of control over the American food supply. That's how Monsanto makes their millions and millions of dollars in profit every year, at the expense of us.
While Monsanto sues farmers to deny them the right to plant seeds other than Monsanto's patented freaks, they also spend millions on lobbying politicians for trade deals to ram GMOs down people's throats in other countries and to not require GMOs to be labeled in food sold in the U.S. This denies you, the grocery shopper, the freedom to choose what to eat unless you have the money to buy high-priced organics.
Right now, we face a problem in that we don't have the freedom to make the choice as to whether or not to consume genetically modified foods because they are not labeled. We need to, the United States government needs to enforce, needs to require labeling for all genetically modified foods so that people who can exercise their freedom of choice to choose not to consume genetically modified foods that are destroying our environment. That's really simple, and it's fair, and anything less is a coercion of our right to choose.
So if you wonder why Occupy activists descended on Monsanto's lobbying office on I Street and on Monsanto installations all over the U.S. on the 17th of September, those are some of their reasons.
Well, DNA is natural, it's the building block of life. And when the good Lord put it together, you know, I think he did it upright. He made lots of different organisms, a complex web of life. Each one dependent on another, and so the circle it closed up tight. But then along came a man and a microscope, and he separated the genes. And when he put them all back together, he made lots of strange, unnatural things. And now food crops grow on the ocean floor, cows they grow on trees. Now the ranchers gaze while their oysters graze on grass that depends on a hormone spray in our genetically modified world.
Along the bustling streets of Santiago, Chile, a McDonald's outlet stands out with wall-sized posters of ice cream cones, hamburgers, and promises of toys tucked into children's meals. However, in response to a growing obesity problem, Chilean Senator Guido Girardi wants to ban the cartoon figures and other marketing ploys that attract children and their parents. Girardi has filed a complaint against McDonald's, Burger King, and Kentucky Fried Chicken restaurants operating in Chile for their use of stickers, games, and other devices to appeal to children. According to the Christian Science Monitor, nearly one quarter of Chile's population is now classified as obese, a rate similar to Britain. Other newly middle-income nations like Brazil, Mexico, and China have also experienced an obesity crisis along with chronic diseases like diabetes and heart disease. Across the globe, it is estimated that 1.5 billion adults are now obese. Mexico, the largest consumer of Coca-Cola on Earth, now has 70% of its adult population considered overweight or obese. This is also true for over 25% of Mexican children between the ages of 5 and 11. In response to the surge in obesity levels, the Mexican government recently launched its obesity prevention strategy, which includes a ban on soda sold in public schools. Global nutrition researcher Barry Popkin of the University of North Carolina blames much of the obesity crisis on global food and beverage giants attracted by growing incomes in countries like Brazil and China. While some government leaders are beginning to confront the causes of obesity, Popkin warns that the food industry is just too powerful.
On the 17th of September, Occupy Wall Street took to the streets of New York City on the one-year anniversary of their initial takeover of Zuccotti Square. They vowed to shut down Wall Street, and protesters in wheelchairs staged an effective street blockade.
Let's move together!
We're all going to move together!
It's around the New York Stock Exchange!
It's around the New York Stock Exchange!
Over 100 people were arrested. Some of the arrests were in the sit-down blockade, some just for walking in the street. There was an ugly report that live streamers, those posting live video to the internet, were especially targeted for arrest. Two of their feeds went down in a 10-minute period. Here's what one of the arrests, other than for a street blockade, sounded like.
What's your name? What's your name? Name!
100 arrests, some on very questionable grounds, but it was still a very bad morning for anyone trying to enter the New York Stock Exchange.
An estimated 1,000 activists gathered September 17th in Lower Manhattan to celebrate the one-year anniversary of Occupy Wall Street, which began with a handful of protesters camping out in Zuccotti Park, not far from the New York Stock Exchange. The New York City protest later blossomed into a global movement against economic inequality and unchecked corporate power, with occupations in more than 600 communities in the U.S. and nearly 100 abroad. Those involved in Occupy are fighting for a bottom-up egalitarian society where the goal is not profit, but community. Marking the anniversary, activists snake through the streets of the financial district, engaging in nonviolent civil disobedience to block business as usual. At the end of the day, police had arrested 185. Throughout the evening of September 17th, activists rallied in several city parks to discuss next steps for the movement, which many in the corporate media have declared dead. Just as the actions were getting underway on September 17th, Between the Lines' Melinda Tuhu spoke with peace activist Anne Wright about her views of the Occupy movement. Wright was a retired U.S. Army colonel and an active duty diplomat when she resigned her post in 2003 to protest the war in Iraq. She now works with many activist groups, including Veterans for Peace and Code Pink Women for Peace. Here she discusses the dilemma Occupy activists have grappled with in holding public space, the relevance of electoral politics, and the issues of U.S. foreign policy and war and peace.
Yeah, well, it's great to get all sorts of people back together again right here, where for a year ago a movement was started to challenge the economic system of the United States, the graft and corruption of Wall Street. And I'm pleased to be back here. Over the course of the year, I've visited 35 Occupies all over the country as I speak about on my speaking tours on foreign policy, and so I was dropping in on all the Occupies in places where I was. So, you know, it's a wonderful group of people in virtually every community in the country who want to challenge this system that we have, that the rich get richer and the poor drowned.
So when you visited some of those places, what did you find? Like, I'm from New Haven, and we had an occupation that lasted 6 months on the New Haven Green, and unfortunately, it really turned into just holding the ground, and people were doing that, and they really weren't doing much outreach in the community, and they really, unfortunately, alienated a lot of people that had started out supporting them. They said, well, what are you doing?
I think that's one of the challenges of all the Occupies, where the holding of the ground became the focal point rather than continuing working the issues. And that's why for the good movements that have been around, they didn't let the fact that the cops threw them out, the city council said tear down these stinky little tents. They just said, oh, forget it. You know, the ground is not important. It's what we're doing with all these new people that have come out to be citizen activists. It's one of the things, you know, now here we're a year later, we understand that holding ground is not the most important thing, but it's the community outreach. It's going to foreclosure court hearings to try to get the courts to stop these foreclosures. It's to try to hold accountable Bank of America and all of the big banks for these predatory lending practices. It's to challenge NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act. Those are the things we really need to be focusing on.
One other thing, in terms of the work that you've been dedicated to, the anti-war work, it seems like you don't hear much about that around Occupy.
Yeah, the anti-war part of it was not the real focus of the initial part, but as anti-war people were a part of Occupy, they kept talking about how the economic system is protecting the military-industrial complex, and that's huge chunks of our money that should be going to social justice issues are being sucked up by, you know, military stuff. So that I think has been woven more into it now. But by far the overwhelming look from Occupy was at, as its name implies, Wall Street and the horrible abuses that Wall Street's been able to get away with.
What do you think about the fact that, I guess, the Tea Party was able to elect 87 freshman members of Congress, you know, 2 years ago, and that they're looking to maybe get more in now? And there hasn't, I mean, except for maybe Elizabeth Warren, there seems to be a real disconnect between Occupy groups and electoral politics. Like, they don't believe in electoral politics almost. Yeah. Do you think that's a problem?
Well, yeah, if you want political change through the current system that we have, then, you know, the Tea Party model of getting big bucks, that you get a lot of big, rich Republicans to give a lot of money to an organization, in this case called the Tea Party, that's then divvied out to candidates that are running so that they really have a ready-made political organization that they just hop right into. Whereas this is definitely a grassroots movement that does not have any big, thank God, it doesn't have any big political backers. They very specifically, the Occupy movement has told the Democratic Party to take a hike, as it has told the Republican Party, and it's not interested in getting involved in politics. It's interested in raising Cain about the issues and almost leaving it to whomever else wants to pick up the political side of it. And if you see the Green Party, that's, I think, stronger this year, you see the Peace and Justice Party that's now formed, that Rocky Anderson is the presidential candidate. But most people that are involved in Wall Street, the Occupy Wall Street, say, I don't want to be a part of that. And there are plenty of Americans that can pick that thing up, and we don't have to do it all. And we see that sometimes motivation and enthusiasm by those who are not doing anything, it's hard to get them to do something. And so that part of it really hasn't moved very far. But it's not up to these people to do it. They shouldn't have to do everything. It's up to anybody that thinks the system ought to change. You know, you need to pick out your part of this thing and start working on it.
That was Ann Wright, a retired colonel in the U.S. Army Reserves, who resigned from the U.S. Foreign Service in protest of the Iraq War in March 2003. Learn more about the Occupy Wall Street movement by visiting our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.
In early April, a group of self-declared white border vigilantes wearing camouflage opened fire on a truck carrying undocumented immigrants just north of the Mexican border near Eloy, Arizona. Two migrants died in the attack. According to the Southern Poverty Law Center, the April killings of migrants crossing the Sonora Desert were similar to murders in 2007, which prompted a Department of Homeland Security investigation. In recent months, white separatists and neo-Nazis have been apprehended placing pipe bombs along the border, targeting arriving immigrants. In May, neo-Nazi activist J.T. Reddy murdered a Latino family in suburban Phoenix before shooting himself. In early 2011, Reddy recruited another man, Jeffrey Harbin, who was later arrested for carrying three homemade bombs. Also in 2011, U.S. Border Control agents found Reddy detaining Mexican migrants in the desert by pointing a gun at a group which had crossed the border. Reddy could have faced criminal charges for engaging in false imprisonment, but federal prosecutors declined to press charges. Law enforcement in Arizona has attributed all non-weather-related deaths of migrants in the Sonoran Desert to drug gangs or human smugglers, ignoring the possible involvement of white supremacist and vigilante groups.